We tell stories to share the human experience.
No matter what form it takes.
Actor, photographer, theatre maker, musician, whoever is trying to be heard.
We can't stop telling stories. There's no end to them.
By telling stories, we connect to each other and create a sense of community.
This is an opportunity to share stories from a talented and diverse range of individuals, in the hope it provides inspiration and knowledge.
This is a podcast about Australian storytelling in all its forms, hosted by two Australians in the arts industry.
Welcome to the Act of Storytelling. Hi, everybody.
I'm Nick Kane.
And I'm Lauren Bailey.
And thanks for listening.
Here we are in podcast 5, and it has been, I don't know how it's been for you, Nick, but it's been a pretty awesome month for me.
It's been a month of beautiful things, actually.
It certainly has been. One of those beautiful things, we saw Supergirly. Opening on Tuesday night, of course.
Yes, what a show. Tell you what, she's one funny lady, isn't she?
She is hilarious. My cheeks were so sore afterwards.
It was some great music. If you haven't seen Supergirly yet, go check out the clips. But she basically takes a whole heap of pop songs and then twists them in a way that you didn't think was humanly possible.
And the clips don't really, you know, you don't get that thing you get from live performance.
She's got such a stage presence. Great energy, genius songwriting. And she even called me Nick Lachey, which was a highlight of my career.
I had to look him up. But I think the other thing about it was, you know, seeing her in character and obviously completely different from the Lulu that we interviewed, but with that same essence of herself and that vulnerability, which is what makes a character truly funny. Anyway, great show. Definitely recommend it.
Excellent show. So how has your month been, Lauren? Talk to me about it.
Well, it's been pretty exciting. As our listeners will know, I finish up full-time work this month.
Yay.
And I'm feeling in a really good place.
You are?
At the moment. I know that there are ups and downs, but I'm in an up place at the moment. I, you know, I've had the great opportunity to work in a really great job for a number of years, and now I'm about to leave that to follow what I really love. All my time and energy, and it's just such an exciting opportunity. And it also feels like this idea of things that happen when they're meant to happen.
Yes.
You know, I might have wanted this to happen a year or so ago, but I don't think I would have been ready in the way that I feel I am now.
You seem like you're in a very good place, and all the listeners wish you well.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I can hear them all. They're calling me now and telling me.
Okay, that's a little disturbing, but whatever. You know, and other stuff this month, continuing on with my voice class with Jen and Andrea, which has been great. Mm-hmm. I've been out on a few auditions, and I've also worked on a project this month, which I can't get too stuck into at the moment.
But top secret.
It's been a really great opportunity to focus on just being myself on camera. You know, you can practice a lot at home, but until you're actually on a professional set, the reality of that, the nerves and everything, it's different. So that's, I feel really lucky to have
fantastic. So there's been a bit of work too, which is great.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a nice transition too from what was probably full-time work into now your new life
again,
as a full-time artist.
Again, it comes back to that thing of things happening at the right time.
And giving the opportunity space to happen to you too. It's coming up, Lauren.
What about your month, Nick?
You've had a month of plenty of opportunities too. Like I was saying to a friend of mine the other night, I've been to a lot of auditions and I had at one point 4 or 5 auditions up in the air, which
I'm not very good at whistling.
But for me as I don't know, as an Australian artist and my strike rate with auditions, that is huge. So it's great to see there's either a lot of work going around or people are thinking of me as well, which is great. So it's been a big change from where I was feeling really down the previous month, and I'm still working on that mindset stuff. But as Lulu said in that podcast, I started to really work on that bringing the fun back. Thanks, Lulu. Bringing the fun back was what it was about. So I really started to change that conversation in the head about the audition. So I used to go in there and just go, this is going to be fun.
Yeah, that was something That was something else I did in the one of the auditions I did this month.
Yeah.
Before I went in, I thought about this. I read something and I was thinking about this idea. You know, often you go into an audition thinking, oh, I want to impress them, or I want them to like me, or I want, and it's all this outward facing logic that you're telling yourself. And so I went in and I can't remember what it was I told myself on the day, but what, you know, I was like, I want to impress myself today.
Yeah.
I want to feel comfortable with the script, and just turning around to the things that, that I wanted from it for myself.
That's
that
right.
was really positive.
Well, it's got to fulfill you too. That's what it's about, isn't it? Going in there and feeling
like
it's
easy to tell you something.
Hey, you're preaching to the converted, I know. Yeah. Trust me. But what I wanted to do this month as well, Lauren, is possibly talk a little bit. Last month we talked about mindset. This month, in celebration of one of our guests, our one guest, is talk about inspiration. And where do you find it?
Oh, that's perfect.
So, you know, this is sort of the next step after mindset. How do you, what inspires you? And I've got a couple that I wanted to share with people. Obviously, theatre inspires me. So that's a go-to quite easily. Even going the other night to Supergirly and seeing that, it just got me inspired to be doing my own work as well, you know. So that is certainly one area. Another one I want to share with people is Stumble Upon. Have you ever used Stumble Upon?
No.
Stumble Upon is a website. Type it in, www.stumbleupon.com. What it does, you get to, at the start, sign up, put all your interests of what you like to hear about, and there's a big button that says stumble. You actually press that button, and it stumbles.
And you fall off your computer chair.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it stumbles to a website that you it thinks you would find interesting. And I tell you what, if you're ever looking for that weird part of inspiration where you need to widen your vision a little bit and find something, it is fantastic because it just leads you in directions that you never thought and stuff that you would never find on the internet. So just check it out. Trust me, I know it sounds a bit strange, but go and check it out. It's fantastic. Oh, and there's one more, Lauren, that I wanted to share with people. If you haven't already, go out and check out Paul Arden, his books. And I know that I got some great recommendations.
Gave me one the other night. I did. I haven't read it yet.
That's okay. It's okay. Check him out. Paul Arden. He's got three books. One is It's Not How Good You Are, It's How Good You Want to Be. The second book is Whatever You Think, Think the Opposite. And number three is God Explained in a Taxi Ride. And they're all inspirational books and they're all very visual, so don't feel like you have to read a lot or anything like that. But they're these books that you can pick up and literally turn to any page and just get something for your day that might relate or that you can use in that day to inspire you.
Might change your perception a little
bit. Might change your perception, all that kind of stuff. So please check it out. Paul Arden, he used to be a creative director, funnily enough.
Nice.
He worked for Saatchi & Saatchi back in the day when advertising was a new form. So well worth checking out. Lauren, I've talked enough. What about your inspiration? Where do you find it?
Oh, golly. Okay, well, I guess in a different way, looking more... I'm all about internal stuff this month.
Yes.
But I was reading something recently in the book that I loaned to you the other night about the guys who went on the road trip and interviewed all those people. And one of the people that they interviewed was – one of the people that they interviewed said, I don't know how often you've had people say this to you, but I often have people say, oh, you're an actor. You're so lucky you know what you want. You know what you want to do, which can be frustrating because as an actor, you think, oh, I know what I want to do. How do I get to do it? Who'll give me the opportunities? But I've had this debate with friends where they say, yeah, but I don't know what I want to do. And that's worse. And I'm not going to get stuck into that debate here. But the guy in the interview said, don't worry about what it is you want to be doing or should be doing in that way of looking forward.
Yeah.
Just look around you and find the thing that motivates you now.
Nice.
And get started in that and then find the next thing that motivates you.
Brings you back into the now, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that completely resonated with me. So fantastic. I guess that's definitely something that I've been thinking about and actively trying to do whenever, you know, particularly as I'm about to start on this next chapter, thinking, what am I going to do? Okay, just break it down. What motivates me, what excites me. Well, those are clearly the things I should be focusing on.
Talking about inspiration, we got a bit of a review this month, Lauren, didn't we?
Oh, yes, that's very exciting. yes, that should have been my first inspiration go-to.
It's all right.
I spent a lot of last year listening to the Inside Acting podcast that is put together by two guys in LA. Well, one's in LA and one's in New York now. Trevor Elgott and AJ Meyer. And they are both actors. I mean, they're I think they call themselves multi-hyphenates. I think that's the term in America.
Nice.
For also being, you know, doing writing and directing and creating your own work and all of that sort of thing. But it's, yeah, it's really exciting to sit down each week and hear what's been happening to them. They really inspired me last year and were one of the reasons that I sat down with you and we put our heads together to think about what we could be doing or how we could be contributing.
How can we give back to the community in Australia?
Get this ball rolling. They have reviewed us on their podcast this month and had a bit of a listen. I sent them a thank you letter to say,
fantastic,
you know, thanks for the inspiration. Gosh. And they've reviewed us on their podcast and put a couple of links up. I don't know. I don't know how you felt, Nick, but it was really exciting for me. Part of the reason we're doing this is to connect to people and to hopefully help inspire other people. So it was just recognition of that.
And that's the thing. That's what I loved about it too. And I did get that little butterfly where you're like, oh, wow, people actually appreciate what you do. But the funny thing is they started the inspiration first for you, Lauren.
Yeah.
And as I said, I heard them through you and then I started listening. And then, you know, we started to think, well, what can we do here for Australians? So they inspired us and hopefully we're going out
say
and inspiring
inspire
more
again,
people.
Nick, say it. Yeah, it's that sense of things growing, which is something that if we can in some small way do, it would be great to contribute to the Australian storytelling industry. On that note, would you like to tell us about this month's guest, Nick?
I will. So this month's guest is a talented creative director. We're talking about inspiration. This guy has probably a lot to do with what our show is actually called, because he was one of the original gentlemen, I guess, that I spoke to about storytelling and this idea of storytelling and how it applies to just about everyone. So I'm really excited to have him here as a guest of the show.
And I'm really excited to meet him because he's definitely seemed such a creative force for you.
Yeah, such a creative influence. So I hope you find as much benefit from listening to this man as I do every day working with him. So here he is, Mr. Paul Edwards. Paul, hello.
Hello. Yeah, I am here, yes.
We are here and we're in the new Bunch offices, which is the place that you chose as your venue.
We are. It's a new space for us as a company and in the heart of Creative South Melbourne.
Yes.
Pretty funky space, as you can see around it. So a lot of it's sort of exposed brick and timbers. And as part of our sort of storytelling, it's part of our new chapter of our story and the sort of the agency we want to be perceived as and think of ourselves as.
Bit of a blank canvas, isn't it?
It's pretty exciting. Well, you're sort of, I guess, a third bumped in at this stage.
Yeah, look, it's so like anything, you know, a building site looks like a building site for a long time until it's actually looking like something you want it to, you know, finally look like. But yeah, we're certainly getting a long way closer to where we want to be, and this is going to be a big week for us.
Fantastic. Well, Paul, if you could, share your story with us.
Thank you very much. Well, I was born in Zambia. And grew up there, as well as in Kenya, the UK, and then South Africa. In total, I went to 8 schools before studying marketing and psychology at university.
Got kicked out a few times, huh?
Sorry, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I won't interrupt.
studying marketing and psychology at university, and then finished that with a postgrad advertising course in South Africa. After I graduated, I managed to land myself a job as a junior copywriter in an ad agency, and worked in South Africa and then in the UK, sort of expanding from the world of advertising into a much broader communications agency in London, and then here in Melbourne. And now I'm the creative director of this agency, Bunch. I really love stories and being part of telling stories and being part of stories for really as long as I can remember. I absolutely devoured books as a child, so much so that my parents would randomly open the page and test me on a chapter just to prove that I had actually read it. But it's not just books. I mean, I love films, and I particularly love that theatre. I love that idea of just the ability of to be able to transport yourself into another time, another place, and another life. And then at the end of the day, you come back and you're back in your own. I loved words as a child, as I said, and I really wanted to start off being a journalist. And then I wanted to be a publisher. And then I really figured that it was, if it had words, I wanted to do it. But my next door neighbour was a creative director of one of South Africa's hottest agencies, and his job just looked uber cool. He basically used his imagination, and people paid him a lot of money to do it. And then he went on these amazing locations to shoot ads, and that was, for me, the clincher, and I was absolutely sold. But since then, I've been lucky enough to use my creativity to help businesses tell their stories to people around the world via countless mediums, radio, TV, events, film, stores, print, and 100 other ways. It's been a blast, and it still is.
Well, so that's a pretty diverse childhood, it sounds like you had there.
Yeah, it was. Certainly a lot of change along the way.
Can you tell us a bit about how you feel like the different cultures that you grew up in sort of affected you? And
yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of the different cultures and actually just the ability of, you know, to handle change. I mean, you know, change, you know, was a constant in growing up. New schools, new cities, new friends. You know, you're always the new boy and all those sorts of things. So the ability to sort of understand that change doesn't always have to be scary. It was just part of growing up. I think that was a huge thing. And then also growing up in Africa, I mean, particularly the storytelling in Africa. I mean, you know, the storytelling tradition of, you know, is a verbal tradition in most of, in, you know, most parts of Africa. It's, you know, it's either through stories or through song. And that sort of, you know, I grew up on stories of how the hippopotamus got so fat and how the crocodile got its teeth and, you know, all the sort of the effectively sort of the African version of the sort of Aesop's fables were the stories of my childhood. You know, you know, clearly in Africa and growing up as a European in Africa, you know, there were, you also had, you know, servants and you had sort of, you know, we had a house boy and, you know, a garden boy and, you know, it's sort of amazing to think now, but sitting there and hearing their stories and you know, and I would be absolutely fascinated, you know, to be sitting there and hearing these stories of cultures that were so alien to the life I was living, but yet so part of the world that I was being brought up in.
It's no wonder you went into what you did when you think about it, right? When I think, I don't know about you, Lauren, but when I think of my childhood and then I hear stories like that, I think, you know, I had a good childhood, but that is another level.
I wasn't sure where you were going then. I was going to say, yeah, that makes my childhood kind of pale in comparison.
But hearing these stories of other cultures must have just broadened and expanded your mind.
Yeah,
at the time.
I think, I mean, you know, my family were a huge sort of book aficionados. I mean, they encouraged me to read from a very early age, completely inappropriate books. I remember sort of grabbing my father's, you know, Wilbur Smith, you know, bodice rippers off the shelf.
Bodice rippers, you know, very good. Mills and Boone.
It wasn't far off, but, you know, there was sort of, you know, violence and incest and sex and murder. And I was sort of, I don't know, 5.5 years old or something. You know, so, you know, whether it scarred me for life, I'm not sure. But, you know, certainly always encouraged me to read. And, you know, we've certainly always, as a family, told stories. You know, we always, you know, we had rules about being at the table and you were never watching TV. There wasn't TV to watch.
Yeah.
So we grew up and, you know, what was the story of your day? Tell me a story of what your day was like. So all of those sorts of factors probably shaped, you know, who and what I've become.
Amazing experience, really. But I guess now you are an Australian citizen.
I am. I've you know, pledged allegiance to the flag. I can't remember the second verse, but I don't think anybody
else can.
No one
does, so that means you're Australian. But a question for you is, what nationality, out of all those nationalities that you've been through, do you identify with most?
I think the easy answer is none.
None?
No. Wow. It's a really weird one. I often get asked, you know, where are you from? And it's, you know, I always say, well, it's a really long story. How long have you got? But the reality is, I don't feel any of those. I feel like a sort of an amalgamation of all of them. I always call myself a bit like a sort of a colonial child, but colonial because that's just the you know, the sort of the era and time I grew up in the colonies of Africa. But a bit like a sort of global nomad. I mean, you know, 8 schools, 5 countries, you know, jobs around the world, etc. So I certainly don't feel English. I don't feel Zambian. South African, and you know, my passport collection's looking good, but as a sense of identity, it's probably a mix of all of them.
Do you like meat pies?
Look, I haven't had a Palmer yet.
Okay. Oh wow, we'll have to do that.
So it's really weird. I've been here 7 years, and everyone keeps telling me it's absolutely ridiculous that I haven't had one. But so that might be the.
Aren't they from Italy? I don't understand.
The citizen term, I think. I don't think the Italian Parmigiana is exactly like how we have it now.
How we do it, But can I ask? Do you feel like your attachment or your identification as an Australian then is growing, or that you're still finding out more about? I know you've been how long have you been here now?
7 years. I think, funny enough, I think my association as a Melburnian is probably stronger than my association as an Australian. You know, I love Melbourne and I love the stories of Melbourne. I love discovering aspects of Melbourne, the hidden side of Melbourne that I didn't know about. It's what I love about Melbourne versus Sydney, that you have to go find it in Melbourne. It's down a door, past the alleyway, past the drunk, up 3 stairs, knock 6 times on the secret door, and then you're in the bar. But I think certainly, I mean, I haven't seen a lot of Australia, and that's on our bucket list. Definitely try and see more. You know, I'd love to get out into the outback, and I haven't done any of that. I mean, you know, I've recently come back from sort of Cape Tribulation for the first time, and that's just and that part of the world is beautiful up there. Mm. But I'm sort of becoming more attuned to Australia as opposed to sort of having been Australian.
Yeah. Hey, and you've always loved stories. Are there any particular stories that resonate with you from the countries that you've grown up in? You've mentioned a couple already.
Yeah,
I
have a soft spot for the Lion King.
Good, me too.
Exactly. There's a Hakuna Matata in all of us.
Nick will ask you to sing that later.
Yeah, there's certainly that. I think there are certainly pivotal stories that it's always an interesting one where you go, these are the stories that I should be reading and memorize, and then these are stories that. Bushveld is a story about a man and his dog, which is an African classic, South African classic, and it's a bit like, I don't know, trying to find the equivalent of an Australian one here. Obviously, I don't know enough Australian, sort of novelists to do, but yeah. It's the story everybody grows up with. There are definitely stories of that, from each sort of place I've lived in that sort of have a soft spot in my heart and a well-thumbed, copy in the bookcase. Hmm.
And what do you believe the key to a good story is?
I think it has to be authenticity. I think it has to be, you either have to feel that you are genuinely being led inside somebody's life or soul or mind, that the author or, the creator of the story is allowing you a peek into something. Mm. But also there's something for me that about there's the craft. I mean, I've seen, great films that should have had great stories told really badly. And that yes. sort of completely yeah. destroys what you wanted from it. I've got one of my all-time favorite books. Actually, here we go, Australian. One of my all-time favorite books is written by an Australian about a young boy in South Africa, which is The Power of One.
Oh, yes.
I've read that book, 60, 70 times. Yeah. And I absolutely love it. And then I saw the film. Bad mistake. Mm. Really bad mistake. And I almost don't do that. I almost don't go and see films or books I love because I'm never quite the same afterwards.
Never really matches.
But I think there's the craft. I think there's the authenticity. And then I just like really interesting stories. I like stories of things I didn't know anything about. I went to see a film the other day and there was a trailer for these Tiffin, which are the guys who take lunch pails to hundreds of thousands of people across India every single day. They pick them up at home and they take them directly hot to the person in the office. It's like this world's most organized logistics system, and it's run, it's like a 100, 200-year-old system. I know nothing about that. Yeah. Just look bloody interesting. So I think there's something about that, the craft, the authenticity, and then just the topic.
So you love devouring knowledge by the sounds of it. And
yeah, I do.
Was that a part of your childhood as well? Because you went into copywriting and so many books around you, even the books that you were saying, the Mills and Boone style books. Is that what drew you to the power of words and what they could
reading
do?
Has always been my first love, and I still do it. I mean, I know if I'm stressed because I don't read, there's normally a pile of my books on the table. Or, if I'm going on holiday, there's 6 books that come with me.
Yeah.
So that's definitely how I escape and how I relax.
Yeah.
And that, that sort of the, that's by, has been and will continue to be my first love is a good book.
Mm. And is that a trait that you feel you inherited from your parents?
No, not really. I mean, they all read and they all, they all like books, but I don't remember them being quite as sort of enveloped by the written word as I've been. My grandfather reads a lot, and my aunt and sort of extended family. But no, we were always encouraged to, as opposed to follow my example.
Mm. Okay, and so let's talk about the early days as a young copywriter. So you started in South Africa and then you went to the UK.
Yeah.
Was that for the same company?
No, it wasn't. My girlfriend and I at the time, who's since become my wife, decided that we wanted a new adventure. I left with hopefully glowing references and arrived in the UK with about sort of £200 in my bank pocket and thinking, great, this is going to be exciting.
Yeah.
And then sort of basically, try to sort of forge a next chapter of my career in London.
Yeah. Now let's talk about that, because there is a story, because I do know you, I work with you, that when you were a young budding creative writer, you wrote to just about every creative agency, every hero, I guess you had in that in that area, and you got met with flat rejection, letter after letter of rejection.
If there was a world record for number of rejection letters, I probably came pretty close.
But what did you learn out of that? What was the key?
Look, I think there were two things, or a couple more things. The first one was probably the biggest lesson, which I wasn't as good as I thought I was.
Yeah.
coming from a, you know, and I was no means a named copywriter in South Africa, but, you know, I'd worked on some very big brands, and yep. I worked for probably one of the most recognized and prestigious agencies there. And I arrived in London and I was a nobody working on brands that half the people had never heard of. And that was a real wake up call, because I genuinely started to doubt whether I had what it took for a long time. Got really mad, wanted to sort of start sticking pins in voodoo dolls of creative directors. But I did, you know, I think that was certainly the sort of, was I good enough? And then I think the other area was, how badly did I want it? Because there were, you know, some of the roles and positions that were not dangled in front of me, but that people were talking about, or ways that you could get around it, was to effectively take unpaid positions, you know, to work for nothing for sort of, you know, 3 months.
Sounds like acting.
I was living in London and I wanted to, you know, like anything, I wanted to live in a nice part of London, not in a flat with 27 people. I wanted to be able to do things. And but there were people who I was job hunting with, who took those roles.
Do you ever look back on that and go, "Oh, I wish I had took that role"?
No, I don't regret not taking the unpaid jobs. The things I do regret are, I did have a couple of letters and responses that were very positive, that were from absolute heroes of mine that were sort of, you know, "You sound interesting, send in your portfolio."
Is there a story there?
It was sort of this chap who's one of my all-time heroes. He's now been knighted for his services to advertising. You know, he's that good. And his EA sent back and said, you know, "Yeah, John liked your letter." Because I sent them an interesting letter. "He loved your letter. And, you know, would be very keen for you to send in your portfolio. And if he thinks there's anything worth seeing, he'll get someone to see you. He'll see you."
Wow.
And what did you do?
Chickened out.
Chickened out?
I chickened out. I think by that stage, it was probably letter number, you know, 42. And I was desperately trying to find a paid job. And the thought of having to sort of, and I'd got a potential job and it was being lined up. And the thought of having to sort of just jettison that for this possible thing and a thing that might not happen. So I chickened out, and I don't have many regrets in my career, but that's pretty much right at the top of the list, because I don't know what would have happened. I may have had another thanks but no thanks, or my life could have gone on a very different trajectory by now, you know. So
And what job did you end up getting?
I ended up working, actually, probably the job that reshaped my faith in my own abilities and other things. I ended up working for The Body Shop, for Anita Roddick herself, the founder of The Body Shop. She didn't believe in advertising, didn't have an advertising agency, but she very, very strongly believed in stories. And of course, every time you go into a store, you can see that, you know, you understand the storytelling of the product and the origins and the rituals and the bathing rituals of the Sumerian women and all those sorts of things. I wrote those.
Wow.
Half of them were slight exaggerations, but they were a lot of them were based on truth. Yeah. And I met her, and she offered me a job, and I ended up working there for a couple of years, pretty much working on everything from bath bombs to cocoa butter, pregnancy cream, through to animal anti-testing and body love. And that was a fantastic, I loved that. She was probably the most passionate woman I've ever met in my entire life.
Yeah, right.
An absolute dynamo, you know, a self-belief that was just unshakable. And just the power of conviction and what she had envisioned for her company and her life and the impact she wanted to make.
And The Body Shop is known for that. Like, they're known for their stories and their advertising and how they turned that shop.
Well, she wanted to stand for something as opposed to just sell something.
Yeah.
The first cosmetic brand ever to break that mold of science and you know, that sort of the beauty of the skin was much more about the beauty within.
And we're talking about that platform, about a story well told and making sure that your platform is right. That's a part of it, isn't it?
Yeah,
like
completely.
Making sure that you...
Well, every single touch point she did, from the packaging to the websites to the, you know, the PR releases to the protest stuff that we did, all was based on this thing of, you know, stand up for something, have an opinion, make your voice count, whether you're, you know, whether it's just by buying some peppermint foot lotion or, you know, talking about, you know, animal cruelty.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Any favorite products?
Look, it was the first time I'd ever had tea tree. You know, that worked. That always goes down very well. Really good shaving foam. If you're ever looking after shaving
I'll
foam,
keep that in mind.
Yeah, very good shaving foam.
I'll put it on the record that you looked at me.
Exactly.
That
thanks.
And I can highly recommend the Sensual Body massage oil.
So. Fantastic.
Oh, and he just looked at me. What's going on there?
He knows his demographics.
we might leave it there.
So can you talk to us a bit about the jump from copywriting into your role as a creative director? You've described your outsider's perception of it, is that it looked cool and that you'd get to travel to amazing locations.
Yeah, that's just how they sell it to you. you know, look, it's somewhere between Don Draper and Mad Men the coal mines of Siberia. You know, it's probably, on some days it's a bit of both.
Yeah.
No, I was very fortunate. I'd been working hard at the body shop, and one of the girls I worked with had left a while before, and I got who was working in the same role, left, and I got a phone call one day from the creative director of a very large brand communications agency called Imagination that said, you know, we're hearing some nice things about you. Do you want to come and have a chat? And I was like, okay. and I went in, they had this extraordinary building and again, driven by a man who had this incredible vision for a multidisciplinary creative agency that was world-class, and he pretty much built it single-handedly.
Yeah.
And they offered me a role as a senior writer, and it was a much bigger role than advertising. It was the first time I'd ever heard the word brand experience and mm-hmm. Brand experience agency. And that really was every single touch point from store design to print to events, conferences, logos, all the sort of looking at every single touch point on how a brand connects and engages with consumers. And they were the agency that pretty much defined that. And I had 7 years there, which was fantastic. And we worked on some amazing brands for Ford and Guinness and Coca-Cola, traveled around the world, which was great. And then I left there and went to their rival, the other
contentious.
Which was a little bit. It was went to the other player in town. Was there for a couple of years as a senior writer, and then saw an opportunity to come to Melbourne as the creative director for that agency, and took it. And here I am.
The rest is history.
Yeah, so take us through, I guess, for people that don't know, the role of a creative director.
Yeah.
Take us through what a normal day looks like for you.
Yeah. Like, I think that's a really easy one. There isn't such thing. I mean, there's such a variety of work that we do. I mean, in effect, what I try and do, and what a good creative director tries to do, and I try and be a good creative director, mm-hmm. is to curate. It's to try and get the very best creative output from the people that you work with, to ensure that a brand's message, and that message can be everything from, you know, here's a new product we're launching and we need to get people excited. We need to get people who are selling it excited, i.e. the sales team and the shop staff, you know, or we need to get people who are buying it excited. So, you know, might be directly to consumers, or we need to get the shareholders excited about, you know, the business we want to buy, and therefore we've got to find a way to tell a story or create an experience that gets them excited. And excited is a huge sort of part of what we do, and it's not just excitement, but if you're not excited, you're not interested, and if you're not interested, you couldn't care less about what I say. So finding a way to make a message memorable or an event much more than an event is really what I try and do, and work with the people around me to help make it happen.
That's really interesting. So you obviously, I mean, you've worked, we'll talk a bit about it soon, but you've worked with some really big brands mm-hmm. and you obviously have a big team for telling those stories. But if we think about Nick and I or our listeners who are often solo artists, do you have any advice for us on this idea of uncovering your own brand? You know, you talk about...
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
I'll let you answer it. I won't give you word. No. Sorry. I was about to say...
Lead you down the path.
I don't know anything. Please talk.
I think it's a fascinating thing. I mean, I've heard more... I mean, we're interviewing for a designer at the moment, and as part of that, we've interviewed, you know, 10 people, and we had sort of nearly 100 applicants. And almost every single one of them talked about personal branding, and it's funny that the world of business and branding has sort of become this thing about personal branding. Now, personal branding can be, you know, I wear Nike and I listen to, you know, an iPhone, which it is, because the brands you choose are a reflection of who you are and how you want the world to see you and how you see yourself. But personal branding and the lessons from big businesses for smaller people are extraordinary, like consistency. So I had some designers who have come up with a logo for themselves and a look and a typeface, and everything they sent me, whether it was an email, a resume, thank you letter, the business card they left behind, was designed that had a look and a feel, and it had a tone of voice. Now that's big business 101. But as an individual trying to get across a story, that's really about consistency, which is really all branding is every time you see a touch point, you should know instantly who it's from.
If you see
white headphones, you don't have to think twice to know that it's Apple.
Yeah.
And that was the genius thing he did when he went from black to white, because every company had black and he went to white, and instantly you didn't have to know a thing about the person to know that they were, when it first came out, that they were on the cutting edge and had an iPhone in their pocket or an iPod in their pocket, as it was then.
Or just a cord in their pocket.
Or a cord in their pocket, just wandering around looking cool. They couldn't afford the iPod at the time.
Yeah.
So I think that sort of thing about, you know, there are things that brands do, consistency, you know, clarity. You know, if you are a sole operator, you know, any creative, what is your distinctive? What do you stand for? How does one photographer make them, you know, what's one photographer's story versus the other? It might be the quality of their work, or it might be the story they're trying to tell, or the perception that they're trying to get across. I mean, you've had some fantastic storytellers on previous podcasts, and whether it's, you know, super girly or photographers or filmmakers, there's a uniqueness and an authenticity to their story that no one else can copy. And that's what a brand is you find something that is your unique story, and you amplify the hell out of it in a consistent way.
And let's talk about you as an individual too, because you're one of our storytellers. Now, this is a story that, speaking to you over a beer, right, we've talked about this many a time, that you don't like to be labelled.
No.
You don't like the idea of someone going, oh, that's Paul, he's like that all the time. And you do it in certain ways too, and we've talked about your days in college and dressing up as Frankenfurter and all kinds of stuff. I tend to do it.
Somehow it always seems to organise. Work around mascara and fishing stockings.
Is that your personal brand?
I don't know. Maybe cross-dressing is in my brand guidelines.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, on face value, and for our listeners, you seem like a lovely gent. Is the best way to describe you, a lovely gent. But the thing is, there's multiple sides to everyone. And as a creative, are you saying
I'm sort of schizophrenic?
Not schizophrenic. No. You've just got many sides to you.
You're saying he seems like a lovely gent, but he's not.
Well, I'm just saying that do you need to, in your creative work, need to have multiple sides to you or multiple areas that you need to go to find creative? You know, what it's about?
Funny enough, I hadn't really thought about it like that, but there probably is something to that. I mean, yes, you asked about the labels. It's probably the thing that I've told every person who's ever, you know, I've ever sat and had a beer with. Long enough,
you know, thought I was special
about labels, because I think I love interesting things. I love interesting movies. I love interesting places. I love interesting books, and I love interesting people. And if you were the same every time I met you, you did the same, acted the same, looked the same, thought the same, you'd be pretty dull pretty quickly. And so I always have this thing, and thank you for calling me a nice, you know, a lovely gent. But you know, through school, I wasn't in the main manor, which shows my South African origins. I wasn't the cool kid in the cool gang, and I wasn't the sort of the guys that got beaten up in the playground at lunchtime. But I was pretty anonymous at school, and I suppose I always sort of thought that thing of, I knew that I had these other sides to me, and everybody had a perception of who I was. So yeah, I used to love shocking people. I mean, I've done sort of a lot of amateur dramatics in my life, and you know, the look on my boss's face when I came out as Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, in full drag regalia, when you know, only the day before he'd seen me sort of, you know, in a blazer,
in a tweed, not far off a tweed.
is an image that will stay with me forever. Yeah. But I think that's probably a reflection of the sort of things that I have to do every day. So in some days I have to go and present an idea to the client, and I have to be, you know, forceful, and I have to be passionate, and I have to tell the client that what they wanted wasn't what they're getting. And you know, you can attest to that, Nick. Yep. I mean, sometimes we go and see clients and you want X, and you can't have X. You can't either afford X, or Mr. Client, you're paying us for our expertise, and we think what you want is wrong.
Yeah.
And therefore, this is what we're presenting to you. So you have to put on a suit. You have to put on this persona of, you're about to spend, whether it's $20,000 or $200,000 on this thing, and we think you've got it wrong. And that's, you know, you have to then tell a story again about why it is and convince, you know. But then other times I have to sit in a room where there's no idea, and I have to, you know, and I've got one, and I can't, but I don't want it always to be my idea. So I sort of lob these little, you know, thought pieces in, and I'm waiting for someone to, you know, tell me how great that idea was, and I pretend it wasn't mine. So there's probably, you know, there is a bit of a chameleon nature to a creative director from, you know, from sort of all of the bits that we do.
I wrote down creative everyman. Mm. The different voices that you have to take on. And you said it perfectly. You have to walk in there possibly with a suit and have authority. But then there's also the other sides where you sit in a beautiful, funky office and you have to lob ideas.
But you also have to understand that every brand we work on is different. So, you know, we do a lot of work for some really big blue chips, and every one of them is different. And you have to put your head, your mind in a company that's doing really, really well and wants to just celebrate. And then you have to put your headspace in a company that's getting absolutely kicked in the, you know, in the marketplace, and there's no room for celebration. It's much more about, you know, honesty and authenticity and confidence that you're going to get through it. So that chameleon nature is certainly there.
I find it interesting. You talked about working at Body Shop and Imagination, and the thing you really liked about both of those jobs was how clear their ideas were. Like they knew what was driving them.
They both had figureheads of the leading the business that were unshakable in their vision for the business.
Yeah. And in your own way, every time a client comes in the door, you need to become really clear about the ideas that you're presenting to them. Can you tell us about your inspiration, or how you generate ideas? I know you said you sort of lob things out there, but what's your initial inspiration?
I always start, I mean, the scariest thing about any job is a blank piece of paper when you haven't got a clue where to start. And the most exciting thing about the job is that same piece of paper, because you haven't got a clue where to start. Every job can take you in every direction, and a lot of the briefs will be very strict, i.e., you know, we want a Christmas party and we want it to be themed, you know, we want a Moroccan Nights Christmas party, and there's only so many places you can go with Moroccan Nights. But lots of the briefs, you know, certainly the briefs and the conversations we love having with our clients are not about give me an X. It's I've got a problem with people. I've got a problem with my staff not believing in me. I've got a problem with, you know, that the guys on the factory floor think we're taking them for granted. I've got a problem with suppliers who think that, you know, we charge them too much. I don't know what you can do, but I love the way you help us talk to people and then engage people. Can you help us with that? And those are the fascinating projects, because that's much more about problem solving than answering just a specific brief. And I think that the clarity of that comes down to, in everything, if I ask you to paint me a picture, the first thing you're going to ask me to do is, well, of what? What sort of picture? What inspires you? What do you want the picture to make you feel? How big is the picture? Does it need to be, you know, or draw me, build me a house? Or, you know, you guys obviously are, you know, taking directions on stage. If the director doesn't know what it is he wants from you, it's very hard to give it to him or her. That's the same sort of thing. Is clarity is essential. Chaos is fantastic, but you can be really completely chaotic. The best way is if you know what it is you're trying to be clear about at the same time.
Yeah. That's fantastic. I remember when, I don't know if you listened, I believe you listened to podcast one with Adam J.A. Cass.
No, that's the one I missed.
Oh, well, you've got that to look forward to, I suppose. But I remember when Adam and I wrote a show that we started writing in November that we performed earlier in the year. And when we first sat down to write and we were on a pretty sharp timeline, I was like, oh, well, what are we going to write a play about? And that was exactly the thing. Adam's like, well, what is the thing we want to investigate? Mm-hmm. What do we want to know? And just changing that question changes it entirely. Yeah. You know, what is
completely? What is, well, it just shines a light. And otherwise, you're just stabbing in the dark and hoping something will hit. And you know, it's much easier to do that when you give yourself some sort of parameters in which to then go wild.
And that was totally my next question, but you've kind of answered it, which is great. Sorry. Because it's this idea of creativity on a timeline. Mm. You said that you faced a timeline with that show where you're like, well, where do I start? Well, you pretty much walk, Paul, into a room every day with a blank canvas, and they're saying to you, hey, you've got 2 weeks. Yeah. I don't have a clue what that is, but you've got 2 weeks.
On a good day, it's 2 weeks. Yeah. Sometimes it's, you know, I mean, we have some projects that, you know, the client, you know, somewhere along the line something slips and we've got 3 days.
Mm. But the importance of the idea and just getting back to the heart of what you're doing is what it's all about.
Absolutely. And I think working to a timeline and working under pressure is something that everybody, you know, no one comes in and says, oh, I'll give you 5 years to come up with this thing, because it just doesn't happen. You know,
it'd be nice.
But I don't know if it would, because I think you'd leave it everything until 4 years and 6 months anyway.
Yeah.
And I think the story that you wanted to tell would keep changing.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. And you change. You know, I wouldn't like to be the same person now in 5 years that I would be now. So I think you change dramatically. But I think that, you know, that sort of laser focus and what is it that you're trying to do? What is it that you want people to feel? And then, you know, and then figure out how to do it in an interesting way.
So can you tell us about a product or a client that you feel you really succeeded in telling their story and communicating?
Yeah. I mean, I've been very fortunate to work on brands that, you know, everybody will know. I mean, you know, did a lot of work for Coke, and I've done a lot of work for, you know, for Ford and you know, I've done these fantastic brands. But I think one of the ones I love the most is takes me back to The Body Shop. And we had this challenge. And she set Anita set us this challenge that she had some basically some stores that were being opening, and she wanted something to go in the window. And normally it's sort of, again, back, I don't know why it's always peppermint foot lotion. That's the one that keeps popping into my head. But peppermint foot lotion normally goes in the window. There was something, you know, and she was like, no, I want to do something differently. So we looked at, we decided we were going to pick up one of the sort of the action activist topics, which was sort of either animal testing or sort of self-love, sort of body, love yourself, you know, and that sort of body image and all those things. And we tried all sorts of different ways, and we tried all these different ads and posters and words, and nothing was looking, and we were having pictures, and it just really wasn't working, and the time pressure was, you know, getting closer and closer. And I remember sitting one night, and I looked down on the pad I'd been working on, and there were just words everywhere. And normally I'm a doodler, I'm a real doodler, but for some reason this night it was literally just like this word cloud. And I looked down at it and I thought, well, maybe we make it just a typographic poster, just a word poster. And I sort of just started connecting all the dots, and I realized that I had all these words for body surgery. So liposuction and nose reduction and breast augmentation. And it all sounded very, it was all very scientific. And there were words, you know, that had sort of lots of syllables and vowels in them. And then I just thought, they're all just ridiculous. They're all, you know, side nasal augmentation or whatever the word was. They all sounded completely ridiculous. And I remember saying to myself, oh, they're all just bloody bollocks. And I suddenly thought to myself, that's maybe something, isn't it? So I wrote these posters and these series of posters, and it had all these great words. And then they all ended with the words, just plain bollocks. And I remember thinking at the time, I wonder what, I thought, nah, they're not going to work. So I sort of put them in back in the computer, went and presented to Anita the next day, and we were sort of this, and we had these, and I could see that she wasn't really going with any of them. And I wasn't very happy with any of them. Anyway, eventually I thought, what the hell, I'm going to show it. So I pulled these out, and she loved them. Absolutely loved them. And she said, I want them, but I don't want them as little sort of A4 posters. I want them as giant, you know, giant window billboards. Yeah. So we made them and we put them in all these stores. And yeah, it was fantastic because we had,
What was the reaction?
I got coverage in the national newspapers.
Oh, yes.
I had people writing in disgusted at Brighton, talking about how on earth we could use these words where children would see them walking past the high street. That woman was 23, which always made me amazed. I remember her name, you know, she was disgusted of, and she was 23. I thought, I'm sure 23-year-olds shouldn't be disgusted by the word bollocks.
Yeah, it's a long life.
I thought you were going to say nasal.
Augmentation. Can't
yeah.
Can't
handle
But you made her feel something.
Maybe that was the thing. But it was one of the first sort of, again, that sort of reminder of, you know, sometimes you have to back yourself. Personally, it was a thing of sometimes you have to, if your gut says something, then normally you should back it, because you'll always kick yourself afterwards. And also that sometimes you can surprise yourself, and other people will surprise you. I didn't think she'd go anywhere near it, and she loved it. And it, you know, I had it framed up in my toilet wall for many years after that.
It's like that thing you said earlier about authenticity and knowing your own voice.
Yeah.
Because
to tell
trusting
that story.
It. You know, L'Oreal or Clinique couldn't, wouldn't, shouldn't,
wouldn't,
couldn't, wouldn't yep. have done anything like. But but it sounded like, in fact, that's how she used to talk all the time. So it almost sounded like she'd written it and put it on a poster.
Excellent. Now, talking about another successful campaign that you've been involved with, well, almost successful campaign, was the Torino Olympics.
Yep.
You developed some creative, when I think you're at Imagination.
Yes.
Where you developed some characters for the Torino Olympics. It came runner-up out of 2,500 entries.
I forget what it was, but there were certainly sort of thousands of entries. Yeah, that's
that
the
must
one...
have been satisfying.
No,
huh,
it was to the go most, all that that's way. The most annoying job I've ever worked on.
Really?
It's the one that got away.
It's the one that got
it's
away.
It's the one, it's the, you know... You know, it's the one where, you know, it got off, you know, it's a bit like that dream role and you almost had it and then Kevin Spacey got it.
Because that's happened to me.
He crapped all over the movie.
Kevin Spacey takes my roles all the time.
We'll but have it to was, start a Facebook page, stop Kevin Spacey it, taking our roles.
It was the one that got away. And we came up with this idea for the mascots. And the mascots, I mean, I think other than the Sydney ones, which I do remember, I can't remember any of the other the mascots. But
I do remember. Crack? Was he part of Cracker? Was part of Sydney?
No, it was an echidna and a wallaby and a something or
and
other.
A cockatoo, I thought, yes.
But we came up with this idea, and it was a beautiful... Again, it was a story. We did a lot of research, the designer and I, and we found these endangered wolves that were in the mountains of Turin, mountains of around Turin. And we basically sort of... created this story of a young girl who found an orphan wolf and raised it, and they became best buds. And they did all, and the icons were beautiful because they, and amazing talent from these designers. They had them doing all the sports. So in the curling one, the wolf was basically brushing the ice with his tail as she threw the thing. And
fantastic.
You know, when she was shooting, she was resting on the dog's stomach as to keep it the gun stable. And it was beautifully done. And we made these stories, and we did illustrated books, and we showed it what it would be like as an animation. And we did them as posters and watches and clocks and snow globes. And we went through all these rounds, and we got, first of all, you're in the top 50, 100, and that was amazing. Yay. And then at the top 10, and then you're down to 2. And I was writing my acceptance speech for my knighthood. I mean, I was convinced that no one else could
calling
come up with
John.
It, you know. And then they went with they chose somebody else, and it was an ice cube.
An ice cube?
An ice cube and a snowflake.
Oh.
Wow.
I know, exactly.
Oh.
Yeah. It was the most, as you can hear in my voice probably, I'm still... a little raw about that one, because it would have been beautiful. And we also came up with the whole opening sequence and the opening ceremony is part of it. And both of them got given away. And who's remembering Turin at mascots now?
That's but it must be say. Hard also when you put so much work into something.
It was months of work.
Yeah, to then see it not, I guess, come to fruition in the way that you wished it would have.
Yeah, I mean, it was clearly very disappointing. On the flip side, to do something so big and get... so close and work with the designer in such a different way. I mean, you know, we had animators and model makers making stuff out of clay, and it was a truly fantastic. Collaborative and creative journey that was fantastic. And as I said, I mean, I still, every time I feel a little nostalgic, I'll flick through the old portfolio and there it'll be.
Fantastic.
So just looking at the, I guess, disappointment and frustration you must have felt off the back of that, have there been times in your career where you have felt, you know, lost or like something's blocking you, not sure how to move forward?
Very much so.
And how do you, I don't know if you have a specific example, but can you talk to us about how you deal with...
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, there's a difference between feeling sort of blocked and in what you're trying to do and genuinely doubting yourself. I mean, I have that regularly, the blank piece of paper thing, you know. Sometimes you just can't, you know, you have to come up with an idea. The team want it, the client wants it, the account director who's getting the client screaming down their ear wants it, and there's nothing in the tank, there's nothing there. You know, you've got to find a way, you know, you've got to trust and back yourself that you will come up with something. But it's a bit like, you know, be funny, go on, be funny. Tell me a joke. Be funny. You better be funny. You really better be funny. It's really hard.
I have a joke, but it's not appropriate for the podcast.
But then you really need. but then you need to be funny, and it's really hard to be funny.
Exactly,
on command. Yeah.
So I think that you've got to do that. But certainly, when that's exaggerated and blown up. I mean, I had a situation here in Melbourne when I arrived to be the creative director of the agency that I moved out for. It just didn't gel. I think I was probably the wrong person for the role in terms of what they wanted from the role. I worked very differently. I had a very different sort of way that I wanted to work and the way that the company wanted me to work, or the way that they traditionally worked. you know, I didn't see much of my wife that first year I was here. So we were in a new country and didn't know anybody. And therefore, so she felt very isolated. And I was sort of at work at 6 a.m. and leaving at midnight because I just couldn't get my head around what I needed to do and how I needed to sort of, you know, integrate myself into the way that it worked. And I genuinely doubted myself that whole year about, was I good enough? What was I doing here? Should I go back to the UK? Help, you know. You know, I was calling people back in the UK going, if I came back, would there be a job back again? And all those sorts of things. And that took a long time to get through. And eventually we agreed that it really wasn't working. And I think that's an important lesson too. Sometimes
to know when to call it.
Sometimes, please. You know, it's not a failure for it not to work. Sometimes things just don't work. It's not meant to be. And that was one of the situations. But I took many, many lessons from that about things that I was good at and things that I was not so good at. I think I'm a much better creative director having gone through that, understood where my limitations and where my weak points were. And it also gave me phenomenal resilience to know that that's not what I wanted to go through again, and find a company. And I freelanced for quite a while after that, and a few years after that. Which I'd never done before, which was interesting too. The sort of it's Friday and there's no job coming in on Monday. That was the first time I'd ever freelance. But understanding, you know, what I wanted from a company, what I wanted for myself, and what I wanted to be as my career. That was good. There were good lessons from there too.
What about your reality, your personal life outside of your creative hub that is work? What do you do to keep yourself sane outside of that?
I was talking to someone the other day, and I think I can't remember the last time I met someone who had a hobby. I don't know anyone who has hobbies. I know people who have interests, and you like doing
Full hobby. Like, so you hobby. Spend a lot like of time.
I did Korean pop for a couple of weeks.
Okay, so that counts as a hobby.
Passing maybe. Interest, maybe.
Fall into the
but
hobby
I know. You know, my grandfather and that era, and my father, they had hobbies. Yeah, they had built hobbies. Trains, or they. I don't know anyone who has hobbies anymore. So I don't have hobbies, but I do have interests. I love wine. I'm trying to become more knowledgeable as opposed to just drinking it.
Yeah.
I love cooking. I love to cook. I love to experiment. I go a bit rogue in the kitchen. I don't like cleaning up. I love going a bit sort of master chefy, weird scientist.
Is there a favorite dish?
Curry.
Curry.
I like a good curry. And growing up in Kenya, there's some amazing curries. There's an extraordinary East African style of cooking for curries. So there's a lot of big Indian community in Kenya. And that's where I sort of got my first taste for curry. I love cooking. I'm trying to stay fit and go to the gym. Not as often as I should as a result of all the cooking I'm doing. And I love traveling. I love getting out and seeing, you know, part of Melbourne and beyond, and as far afield of as much of Australia as I can.
If your life was an ad campaign, what type of campaign do you think it would be?
Well, I'd like to think it's the one that you weren't expecting. If you knew you were watching my life as an ad campaign, I'd like to think it would be one that would surprise you. I like to think it would be one that had a combination of probably a proud heritage and tradition, but told in a contemporary way. I mean, I'm very proud, you know, pleased and proud to have lived in so many places, and I think it's made me who I am. I think, you know, this sort of, I'll use kaleidoscope already tonight, but it is a bit of a kaleidoscope of cultures and backgrounds and forces that have shaped me, and I'm very happy to have been part of all that. But I also like the fact that, you know, it's not rooted in any one tradition. I can express it in different ways. So I think if it as a style, it would be something would be based in tradition but told in an interesting way.
Is there an actual reference? Have you got an ad that comes to mind that might actually explain that?
Tradition told in an interesting way. Yeah, actually, I do. There's an amazing viral ad for the whiskey Johnny Walker.
Yes.
Robert Carlyle, the great actor. And he's basically walking down. It's a great ad if you should YouTube it. He's basically walking through the Scottish Highlands in a which I understand is actually just a one shot. The whole thing was done in one shot. Apparently it was take 642, but the final one was one shot. And he basically does this entire monologue of about 200 years of Johnny Walker, and he just tells a story, and he walks down the track, and there are these weird things. There's like a bagpipe guy clearly Scotland, and there must be bagpipes. There's a bagpipe guy who basically tells to, I think, shut up. And then there's a door in the middle of the path.
Yes, there is.
That he opens the door and he walks through, and it's just a door.
And he's authentic the whole time. Oh, like, yeah, it's like, this is all normal.
Yeah, it's just as if, yeah, as if this is, you know, you just find, and then there's a shop, and then there's, he gets a bottle of whiskey and he throws it and it smashes, and it's just, it's a beautiful ad, and it's great content. I think it's like 9 minutes long or seven minutes long, and it's gone by, it's been seen by, you know, 300 million people or whatever it has been, but it's a beautiful ad, beautifully crafted. The craft and the script are fantastic. The way it's made is amazing. It's genuine. I mean, it can only be for Johnny Walker. It's all about a man walking through the Highlands. And so there's something authentic about that. So, it's a nice sort of amalgam of all the things that I think, you know, make for a great story.
Great answer. Advice now. Let's talk about young creatives starting out in the game. What would be a little gem of knowledge that you would give to them after your years being a creative director?
The first thing is never, ever, 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 ever give up.
Ever.
Ever.
You sure?
Know, yeah, ever. It's an extraordinary, it's a hard gig. I mean, and whichever creative discipline you're in, whether you want to be an actor, you want to be a singer, you want to be a painter, you want to be a writer, you want to be a filmmaker, a photographer, there's a lot of people out there who either have the talent that you do or the hunger. And there's, that's why there are, the old classic of, why there are so many, actors in LA, and they're just bringing you a coffee.
Yeah.
But there's, there are millions of people who want to do creative. They think they're creative, or they are creative, and they want to be paid for being creative, and they want to be paid to do the things that they love to do.
And expressing yourself is universal.
It is, and everybody's got a story, and not everyone is creative. I truly believe that. Not everybody understands how to release that creativity or wants to release that creativity. They're happy to, park it to one side, but everyone has a creative side to them. So I think there's the thing is, you have to want it. You have to, return those emails and return those phone calls when the door opens, go through it. The other thing I also think is, don't imagine that people are not interested in you. I mean, I get, unsolicited stuff, and I look at it, and sometimes if it's really good, I'll come in. It cost me a cup of coffee, or even, half an hour. I may not have anything at the time, but that person will stick in my, stick in my mind. And when something does come up, we're hiring some people, and one of the guys that we're shortlisting is someone we spoke to almost a year ago, and he emailed back in and said, "I see you're hiring again. I really want to work with you.
Yeah.
Can I come in again?" And so, don't imagine that those sort of cold calling things never work. You have to, you have to kiss a lot of, frogs to find a prince. You have to make a lot of emails, phone a lot of people, write to a lot of people.
And have the courage to do so.
And have the courage, and have the courage to know that, you're going to get 15 rejections, but that one of those rejections might turn out to be something interesting down the line.
So just touching back on this idea of creating your own brand awareness, we have a question from one of our podcast listeners.
Yeah.
Andrea McKinnon was really interested to ask a question this month, and she'd like to know your thoughts on creating brand awareness without hitting people over the head. There's that really fine line of when you go from just creating awareness of a product to making people switch off completely.
Yeah.
Can you give us your
thoughts
on that?
Yeah, look, there's, like in anything, there's the dark side of commercialism and branding and business and advertising and all those sorts of things that, if I have to hear one more man telling me about his, pot plants dressed in a pink tutu on the radio, I'm going to shoot him, So there is definitely that side where it can hit you over it. I don't think there is a line. I think it's more about an intent. If you genuinely add value, and if it's interesting, and if it feels like you reward me for the participation, either the 30 seconds in the radio ad, or the 3 minutes in the shop, or the pamphlet that comes through the door, I think then you understand that, brands and businesses, and that's how, you consume everything. I mean, you may not like branding, but everything you wear and buy and drive the car and is a result and paid for by brands and brand value and people, wanting those brands and therefore making them valuable. So I think value is, if it's of value, people don't mind. If it's annoying and valueless, or even to the other end, if it actually impact or devalue something, that's when I think, you know, it becomes annoying. Shouting never works either.
Capitals.
It's a bit like, you know, if shouted through this microphone for the last 20 minutes, you know, A, I probably wouldn't be invited back again. but B, you know, you and the listeners, you know, would have turned off because it's just annoying and it's noise and it doesn't add any value. And
but I think you're absolutely right. You know, looking at, because things can shout without being verbal, looking at whatever you've created or whatever interaction, connection you're thinking about making with someone and just going, is this adding value? Yeah. And that's just a really clear way
I think there's
to
also
tell.
A huge difference between just telling and engaging. There are lots of things, you know, shop open 9 a.m., shop closing down. You don't need to do much more than that. But I mean, there's a fantastic story in advertising about a blind man who was begging on the side of the road, and he had "I am blind." You know, as you do, you know, 90% of the people walk past him, and a couple of spare coins would go into his cap. And I don't know whether it's true, but it's certainly become an urban legend in the advertising world that an advertising man saw that and felt sorry for him and basically knelt in front of him, wrote something on his board, on his sign, and then left. And to the blind guy's astonishment, basically he got money pouring in, absolutely pouring in. People were literally throwing money at him. And he asked somebody what they'd written, and they said he only added three words: "It is spring, and I am blind."
Oh,
you know?
And that's what I mean. Is you know, you're still telling the world that you're blind. You're still doing exactly the same thing. All you're doing is putting their mind in a place of what it would be like to be blind, not just telling them that you're blind.
Yeah.
And that's extraordinary. And it's a great story, and it probably is apocryphal, but it's a great story. But it does exactly the same thing. You know, if you saw that, all the emotions that would flood through your head about the things and the feeling and the smells and all that stuff would make you feel like you wanted to give him some money versus the, I'll just toss him some coins because I feel guilty.
And that is the difference. What an answer to that question, because that is the difference between adding value to someone's day and not adding value to someone's day. So the final question I have for you here as well is your current role. Do you feel like it's currently nourishing all your creative outlets, and what's the future hold? Is it as a creative director? Is that how you see yourself moving forward?
I think you know, we're sitting in this new building, and there is a genuine passion of mine to be to use this as a springboard for the company. We've got very big ideas and about where we want to go, and got plans for sort of, you know, world domination that starts in Sydney and maybe go on to Asia and things. But you know, I'd like to be part of, you know, the new story that the Bunch is creating for a long time. You know, it is an exciting time. It's an extraordinary exciting time to be in the creative world. I mean, the amount of mediums and channels and, you know, things that are available to storytellers, whether they're corporate or non, are extraordinary. You know, brands are looking constantly for new things. They're looking for new ways. People are turning off advertising. People are, you know, turning off all these sorts of things, and people are always, you know, there'll always be something, because people want to be stories. They want to be entertained. They want to be inspired. They want to feel like they belong to a community. All of these things are tools that, you know, brands and businesses need to use and need to use in interesting ways. So I think that's a very exciting spot. I love being a creative director. I love, you know, the fact that, you know, it's been a long, hard slog to get here, and I'm certainly enjoying you know, the sort of the feeling of accomplishment that I have, but I also love the fact that I want to help others. You know, we're hiring some people and we're hiring designers, and I love seeing juniors become mids, and I love people getting experiences. We've got a young girl who works with us that up until a week ago had never been on a plane overseas.
Yes.
She's now in Bali, having the most extraordinary event, and with 400 people, and the client is just ecstatic, and she's just blossomed from levels of sort of very nervous intern to seasoned, you know, pro. That's phenomenal for me. And you know, I've still got career goals and all those sorts of things, but being part and helping people grow is a huge part of what I'm after, as well as the digital space. You know, there's no longer a standalone digital world. It's connected to everything we do, and I don't know as much about it as I'd like. So,
and it's constantly changing.
Constantly changing. So I'd like to know a little bit more about that. But no, it's as I said, we started all the way back at the beginning in my bio. It has been a blast, and it still is.
And beautiful. And we're going to put a link up to Bunch's website as well on the podcast, because I think we've heard for the past hour or so how fantastic the creative director is. So go and check out the stuff and see some of the creative, because it is brilliant.
Oh, thanks very much. It'll be fantastic. And if anybody, you know, we have an email which is, starts with the word curious. And if anyone's curious about what we do and some of that sort of stuff, drop us an email.
curious@bunch.com.au.
Correct.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much.
No worries. Thanks very much. It's been a pleasure.
So that was pretty special.
It was. It was a different take on storytelling, which I really love. Something completely different to what we've done before.
Yeah, it's nice to look at things from different angles. Early on, he talked about, right at the start, authenticity.
Yes.
And the voice of the storyteller. And then at the end, when we were talking about when we asked him Andrea's question about where is the line for not hitting someone over the head with your brand.
Yes.
And he said that he thinks that's comes down to adding value.
Mm.
And I think they're linked.
So true.
Like if you're authentically in touch with why you want to tell stories and what drives you, then I think you continue to connect with other people in a way that adds value. What did you take out of that?
Paul at one point said, you have to have the conviction to believe that people are interested in you. And I really, that it's all about self-belief, right? Because sometimes, and you have to have the courage to believe that people are interested in you too. And that comes back to this whole idea of your personal brand and making sure that what you deliver is your truth. Because you'll find people are actually interested in you if you find your truth. So that was my takeout. It's right off the back of yours. I think we connected that takeout beautifully.
Well, that was a great interview with another great storyteller.
Yet another one.
And it's been so exciting. I mean, 5 podcasts now.
Wow.
And I just, since we've started doing this, everyone I speak to, I just keep hearing people say, oh, blah, 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 stories. Oh, they're talking about storytelling. And
it does. It pops in and you see it, don't you? In everyone's starting to get
enthused. Yeah, I'm just noticing it in everything.
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting.
And what about your month coming up, Lauren? What's the plan?
Oh, well, the plan is that I'm just about to jump on a plane to head to Bali.
Oh, your life, Bali. How fantastic.
To work with Ale again.
Yes.
Which is very exciting. But of course, the course itself starts with a massive mountain climb.
So is it the same course you did last year?
No, it follows on.
Follows on.
You know, we did some mask last year. We'll do a lot more mask this time.
Great.
And we're working on the seagull. Chekhov's seagull.
Very nice.
And of course, Balinese dance, and I don't even know yet.
But it
starts with the climb. So if I survive that, you'll get a photo from me in the early hours of Tuesday morning from the top of a volcano.
What a fantastic metaphor for your life right now too, huh? Like the line in the sand of climbing the mountain and starting afresh. Too much? Too metaphorical for you?
Maybe. Let me get my paints out and I'll get started.
And what else? Is there anything else?
I guess just the other thing I want to mention as I start the new chapter of my life. I just feel like I mentioned at the start of the podcast how lucky I feel to be getting into this next chapter. But one of the things I notice about it is that it suddenly means I become a bit of a yes man. I can start saying yes to experiences that I wouldn't necessarily previously have been able to because of time or energy or money. I just wouldn't have been able to commit. And one of those is a short film that I'm going to be working on just before we record the next podcast.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'll be able to talk about how
we can talk about it, huh?
I'm going to be acting coaching, which is a new thing for me.
What a new role. Yeah, great.
But yeah, I just want to touch on that now and we'll talk about how it goes next month. But I'm pretty excited about that.
Fantastic.
What about you, C. Diggity?
C. Diggity. I am up to
many
things.
I'm just reading from my auto cue here.
Yeah. See diggity. That's now going to be a catchphrase. Fantastic. What am I up to? I have a few workshops coming up, being a bit of a workshop junkie this month, which I'm looking forward to. One's with a casting agent, which I always enjoy doing those,
yeah.
A couple of days, and one's with Gabby, who I've spoken about.
Oh,
Gabby.
Oh, the wonderful Gabby.
Yeah, a few times on the show. So I'm looking forward to that. I am also looking forward to having a bit of a month of seeing what comes at me at the moment, which is another way of saying I don't have a lot on my plate right now. But sometimes clear air and fresh air is a good thing.
Yeah, and particularly on the back of this month. I mean, when
you've been crazy.
You've been doing so much. And as you said, you've still got a couple of projects
still in the air. That's a good point. So it could fill up really quickly. But it's also that nice light at the end of the tunnel when you've had a very busy month to go, my chance to recharge. So I'm looking forward to that next month.
Fantastic.
Now, let's get into reviews for this month.
Yeah, this month I would like to take us over to Perth.
Perth, lovely place. Very clean.
Oh, is it? I haven't been there for a while. Been there since I was little. But I want to just touch on the Winter Arts Festival is starting this month. It's in its 10th consecutive year. And the festival runs over 3 months and comprises theatre, music, comedy, cabaret, film, I don't know, ballet, concert, community events, workshops, all sorts of stuff.
Wow.
And you can check out the full program at Perth Winter Arts. But when I was just having a look at some of the shows that are on over there, because, you know, it's really exciting to know what's being made in other parts of the country. And one particular show jumped out at me. It's called Giving Up the Ghosts, and it's on at the Blue Room Theatre in Northbridge. And the Blue Room, it kind of runs in a similar way to La Mama, I believe, here in Melbourne, supporting independent theatre and giving theatre makers the opportunity to develop their shows. The team for this particular play, they've been individually awarded for a number of projects. One of the actress, Georgia King, she was in one of Patricia Cornelius's Slut. She was nominated for Best Actress for that, and also for Scent Tales, which has won all sorts of awards in Western Australia. Director and actor Joe Louis and Paul, I'm not sure about the surname. Grubavac. We're going to go with that.
I think we both got that wrong.
from Renegade Productions, they're working on it. It just sounds like a really exciting project. So, I don't know. It's just nice to be
in Perth and you're having a listen, go along and have a watch.
I mean, the whole festival sounds amazing, but I've just been keeping an eye on some of the stuff happening at Blue Room, and I think there's some really exciting stuff happening over there. What about you? Have you got any recommendations for us, Nick?
Yeah, a little surprise packet that came up after I went to Chapel of Chapel and saw Supergirly was just over there in the main chapel is a show called Teleni.
Oh, the Fly on the Wall Theatre Company show.
Fly on the Wall. So basically, Teleni is a stylish, playful nosedive into the erotic underbelly of the 1920s.
Ooh.
So it sounds great. It's got a big cast. I think it's very confronting in a lot of ways. A few actors there that I know that are in that. So it's going to be a really good show because they're fantastic. And if the rest of the cast
Fly on the
is anything
Wall,
like
they
them,
do some great, really high-quality theatre.
Exactly. So if you're in and around Chapel, off Chapel, make a night of it. You could probably do the double, couldn't you? Supergirly, Teleni, do both of them.
Well, Lulu mentioned she's going to check it out one night.
Yeah, exactly. Which is the beauty of that whole setup, isn't it? When you've got a few theatres in that one space, the ability
of an artistic community.
Correct, exactly.
Yeah. And then one more thing to announce. Well, I don't know announce, but just to let you know. But just to let you know, we have noticed that some of our content has been dropping off the bottom of our About Me page as we post our monthly podcasts, which is a really nice reminder as our podcast links disappear that we need to launch our own website. So that's something that I'm going to be looking into.
It's a good thing too that we started it off. We wanted to keep it simple, Lauren, but I guess now our About Me page needs to blossom more, so we have to move a little bit and look at a page that will support what we want to do into the future.
Yeah, and so just for anyone who has been listening to our previous podcasts and not sure where the links that we reference in those podcasts are, they'll be back online shortly and we'll tell you all about that next month.
But until that time, you can still find us on all the usual channels. So the About Me page is still very much working. The Facebook, Twitter, hit us up on those and give us your feedback. Any thoughts, questions that you have, do pass them on. SoundCloud and iTunes, we're there as well. You can download from iTunes. Hit us up.
And And of course, we are so happy to ask our guests listener questions.
Yes.
So I know we haven't announced next month yet, but that'll be coming out in the next week or so. And if you do have any questions, please let us know.
Safe trips, Lauren. I hope Bali's fantastic.
I'm sure it will be. I hope your quiet month does flips and does exactly the opposite, and it's really exciting.
Yes, thank you.
And please continue to join us on the Act of Storytelling.
And thanks for listening.